spilling into space. It was these outbreaks of life which drew the predatory machines. They placed automated watching devices and traps around promising solar systems, ready to be triggered as soon as new spacefaring cultures stumbled upon them. So the grubs and their allies, the few that remained, grew intensely paranoid and watchful for the signs of new life. The grubs had never really paid much attention to Earth's system. Curiosity was still something that required an effort of will for them, and it was not until the signs of intelligence around Earth became blatant that the grubs forced themselves to become interested. They watched and waited to see if the humans would make any forays into interstellar space, and for centuries, and then thousands of years, nothing happened. But then something did happen, and it was not auspicious. What Ferris had learned from Gideon dovetailed exactly with what Skye had learned aboard the Caluche. Ferris's grub had been chased for hundreds of light years, across centuries of time, by a single pursuing enemy. The enemy machine moved faster than the grub ship, able to make sharper turns and steeper decelerations. The enemy made the grub's mastery of momentum and inertia look ham-fisted in the extreme. Yet, fast and strong as the killing machines were, they had limitations. It might have been more accurate to call them blind spots, which the grubs had carefully documented over the millennia. Their techniques of gravitational sensing were surprisingly crude for such otherwise efficient killers. Grub vessels had sometimes survived attacks by hiding themselves near, or within, larger camouflaging masses. Finding the yellow world, with the killing machines closing on him fast, Gideon had seen his chance. He had located the deep geologic feature with an emotion as close to blessed joy as his neurophysiology allowed. On the approach, the enemy had engaged him with long-range weapons, but the grub had hidden his ship behind the planet's moon, the salvo of antimatter slugs gouging a chain of craters across the moon's surface. The grub had waited until the moon's position allowed him to make a rapid, unseen descent into the atmosphere, and then into the chasm, the potential hideaway he had already scouted from space. He had enlarged and deepened it with his own weapons, burrowing further and further into the world's crust. Fortunately, the thick, poisonous atmosphere camouflaged most of his efforts. But on the way in, he had made a terrible error, brushing the sheer walls with his projected skein of armoring force. A billion tons of rubble had come crashing down, entombing him when he had meant only to hide until the killing machine moved on to seek another target. He had expected to wait perhaps 1,000 years at the longest, an eye blink in grub terms. It had been considerably longer than that before anyone came. "He must have wanted you to find him," I said. Ferris answered, "Yes. By then he figured the enemy must have moved on. He was using the ship to signal his presence, altering the ratios of gases in the chasm, warming them, too. He was sending out other signals, too, exotic radiation, but we didn't even detect that. I don't think the other grubs did either. For a long time, I think they kept in touch. I found something in his ship, something that didn't seem to be part of it, intact where all else showed signs of great antiquity and loss of function. It was like a glittering dandelion ball about a meter wide, just floating in its own chamber, suspended in a cradle of force. Quite beautiful and mesmerizing to look at." "What was it?" Zebra asked. He had anticipated her question. "I tried to find out for myself, but the results I got, based on the extremely crude and limited tests I was capable of running, were contradictory, paradoxical."